Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
I believe that the president is a citizen. I believe the president is a Christian. I'll take him at his word.
This bill will write into permanent law a policy on which there's been strong popular and congressional agreement for over 35 years. The federal government should not use tax dollars to support or promote elective abortion.
This legislation represents an entirely new front in the war against women and their families.
The church bigwigs of today probably wouldn't allow Paul to preach in any congregation. Weakness? Fear? Trembling? You've got to be kidding.
Moms in Ohio love Issues Etc.
Mom!
Seems like every time you turn around, there's a new threat to traditional natural marriage. In the old days, it was just divorce. That's all you had to worry about. Then, of course, along came contraception. These things became more and more socially acceptable over time. Then cohabitation. Now no one bats an eye about cohabitation. That horse left the barn so long ago. And more lately, same-sex union, same-sex marriage, redefining parenthood, and the like. We're going to talk about threats to traditional marriage, contraception, divorce, cohabitation, and same-sex unions. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest for the first 10 minutes of this hour. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Tuesday afternoon. It's the 15th of February. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about Egypt's revolution and human rights, especially with regard to Islam. And we're interested in your questions and your comments, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, last week, you spoke before the Rhode Island State Legislature about same-sex marriage, where they are, some are trying to get that passed. How did it go?
Well, I think it went terrific, actually. You could sort of tell. Of course, it was a mob scene. You know, there were a lot of people there on both sides. It was a very good turnout on both sides. And, in fact, they had to close the building, close access to the building, because the fire marshal was not happy, you know. So, obviously, people feel very strongly about it. But they don't have the votes to pull it off in Rhode Island, and you could kind of tell they were scrambling around looking for some kind of compromise or something. But their governor and their speaker of the House has made it a priority to do same-sex marriage, and I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. So it was very gratifying for us to be there and to make our arguments and make our case for why natural marriage is really what we want to stay with. And the thrust of my remarks are now posted up on the Ruth Institute blog. And basically, my theme was that, you know, history is not going to be kind to you if you redefine marriage, because you're redefining parenthood at the same time, and you're not even talking about it. You're just pushing this thing through without giving a moment's thought to what you're really setting into motion. And so I talked for about 5 minutes, and I think it made an impact on people. So I'm very pleased that I was there, and we're pleased with how things seem to be developing over there.
In 2009, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops mentioned four threats to traditional marriage. The first that they mentioned was contraception. How is this a threat to traditional natural marriage?
Well, you know, that document that the bishops put out is called Love and Life and the Divine Plan, and the whole theme of the document is why marriage is so important and why it's such a great gift from God. They say at the beginning that marriage is the one blessing from God that was not harmed, that was not taken away by the flood, and it was not taken away by the curse, you know, by original sin didn't wipe away the good of matrimony. And so the reason that the contraception is considered a threat to natural marriage is that it completely undermines one of the purposes of marriage, which is the procreative function and the procreative meaning of the human sexual act. And so so by taking out the sort of whole procreative feature of the sexual act itself, the purpose of the point of getting married becomes less, you know, it becomes less important to get married, and it really distorts and confuses people's thinking about what marriage is all about. And so they have a you know, kind of a brief section about that in there, but they, and that, those points have obviously been developed at much greater length in other Catholic documents.
The next one that they mention, I'll just go in the order that they seem to fall logically, is cohabitation. As I said at the beginning, hardly anyone is losing sleep over cohabitation, even within the church, sad to say. Why is this a threat? If people want to live together apart from marriage, how is this a threat to marriage?
Well, what's happening, Todd, is that cohabitation is becoming a substitute for marriage. And so people, you know, are not, they're not taking marriage seriously in the first place, right? And they're not thinking in terms of marriage as a lifelong bodily union, complete union of persons, that is mutually exclusive, lifelong, and sexually exclusive. Cohabitation undermines that whole understanding of what marriage is about, because, you know, here you can live with somebody, you can kind of go through the motions of being married without really completely giving yourself over to it. And it's that whole holding back aspect of cohabitation that makes it so destructive. And as we've talked about many times on this program, the evidence is all in that cohabitation is just a really bad idea, in the sense that living together prior to marriage increases your probability of divorce and decreases your probability of having a happy marriage. You know, it leads to relationship problems down the road. So it's actively counterproductive to lifelong married love. And I think the reason is because it allows you to believe that you're married, or that you're really giving yourself over to somebody, but actually you're holding back all the time, you know. And so you do that for, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years. You live together for 2 or 3, 4 years, using contraception, of course. You know, that's part of what makes it possible. And then you decide, oh, let's spring for the wedding. Let's get married. It'll all be great. And then you come to find out, of course, now you want to give yourself over. Now you want each and every sexual act to be deeply meaningful. And, of course, you can't quite figure out how to do that because you've been practicing the wrong things all the time. So there are a number of things wrong with cohabitation. That's just kind of the highlight of it. But the bishops are quite right on, and the social science evidence is quite right on, that the bishops are correct to be worried about cohabitation. And in about 10 days, the Ruth Institute's going to be having a whole conference on this, the subject of this pastoral letter, Love and Life of the Divine Plan. And we'll have a whole talk by a top expert. Dr. Brad Wilcox is going to come and just roll through all of the social science evidence on why cohabitation is such a bad idea, and why the bishop, not only the bishops have it right, but your grandma had it right when she told you you really shouldn't be shacking up with somebody. So we're really looking forward to hearing what Dr. Wilcox has to say about that at our conference next week.
The next one seems self-evident, but I think it's very important to delve into the details. How is divorce, what about divorce itself,
yes,
is a threat to traditional marriage?
Well, you know, the idea of marriage is that it's a lifelong commitment, right? It's that marriage is supposed to be a lifelong complete giving of the self. And when you have divorce without cause, you know, I mean, just looking at it from a civil point of view, the move from divorce for cause to divorce for any reason or no reason, which is basically what we have now, what that means is that no one can enter into marriage with the idea that it will be permanent. So even if you, as a religious matter, for all kinds of great theological reasons, believe that that marriage is to be permanent, because, you know, Jesus is pretty clear about that in Matthew 19, if you go into it with the idea that, by golly, we are going to be permanent and we are going to live together forever and divorce is never going to touch us, the plain fact of the matter is the government does not allow you to have that, because either party can at any time renege, and there's really nothing you can do about it. The government comes in on the side of the party that wants to dissolve the marriage, not in favor of the party that wants to keep the relationship going. And so all of the goods of marriage that require long-term commitment and connection, all of those goods are compromised by doing that. So if you just look at it in the natural order, what are some of the things that people can do over the lifetime because they have a lifetime commitment? Well, obviously they can have kids together. Well, you know, gee whiz, the birth rate has gone way, way down since the advent of no-fault divorce. People used to invest in each other's careers. One person would go to college and or medical school, and the other one would work, and then they would live together, and they would both reap the benefits of that. Well, hardly anybody does that anymore. People don't do that because they don't have a permanent contract. People take care of their educational plans first and then get married, you know, because they don't really trust one another. So there are many goods of marriage that are compromised by just allowing it to fall apart like that, the way the state does. And those are just the natural goods, never mind the supernatural goods, never mind the psychic goods that come from the kind of trust that you can develop when you know that your marriage bond is permanent. And once again, the person that we'll have speaking about this topic at our conference in Nashville is Dr. Doug Allen, who is an economist who's collected more data on divorce and the ill effects of divorce on society. He's got the Canadian data. He's got the American data. He's just got it down cold, you know. And so he knows more about that than anybody, what the natural problems are of allowing divorce on demand like this. So once again, the bishops are being supported, completely supported, by what the social science evidence has to say.
With only about 20 seconds, we'll take a break and come back to these subjects. It sounds as though no-fault divorce has turned marriage itself into kind of a more elaborate and expensive form of cohabitation.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's a good way of putting it. In fact, it's so insecure. I heard one person say that people don't get married anymore until they're ready to get divorced. Until they think they can afford a divorce, they don't get married. And so the lower classes never get around to that because they can never afford a divorce, so they just don't even go through it. And the upper classes postpone marriage until each of them is financially independent enough that if the thing fell apart, they'd all be okay. So in either case, you know, I think you're quite right. It's a more elaborate form of cohabitation, but not much more. And the losses to that are really quite staggering.
Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morse is our guest. We'll talk with her about another threat to traditional marriage, same-sex union, same-sex marriage, after this. Do all people share a common morality? Is natural law an errant teaching of the Roman Catholic Church? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled Natural Law, A Lutheran Reappraisal. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Natural Law by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Natural Law, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Independent and in the black for 2 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Tuesday afternoon, February the 15th. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is our guest for a few more minutes. We're talking about threats to traditional marriage. We've talked about contraception, divorce, and cohabitation. We turn now to same-sex unions. And, of course, this one is kind of there's a ready-made response to this. They've anticipated what you have to say, Jennifer. They say there is no way in the world that allowing two people of the same sex who love one another to live together in a lifelong monogamous relationship, whatever you call it, is going to threaten your traditional marriage, your traditional marriage in general. How do you respond?
Well, they said that about no-fault divorce, too. They said, you know, how is your neighbor's divorce going to affect you? And we now know that that was a completely ridiculous thing to say, because the plain fact of the matter is that no-fault divorce didn't just change the rules for a handful of people who would have gotten divorced in any case, as was the case back in the 60s, but no-fault divorce changed the rules for everybody. And so people who would ordinarily never give a thought to divorce now have all of a sudden a new set of incentives and a new set of pressures placed upon them. And so it does change people's behavior. And so the same thing will happen with same-sex unions. Same-sex unions takes away the sexual complementarity that is at the core of married life, that is the core of seeking another as a kind of completion of the self in a way. You can't do that with a mirror image of yourself, right? And so what a same-sex couple does is different in kind from what an opposite-sex couple does. So sooner or later, it won't even be necessary that marriage be considered a sexual union anymore. So many things are being put into place and changing, and the incentives that are being changed are going to have long-term, long ramifications, and you know, really nobody's paying much attention to how that's all going to play out. And so those will be some of the themes that I'll talk about in my talk at the conference. And the other issue that comes up in this regard is the use of artificial reproductive technology, which is something the bishops only glance on, you know, they kind of touch lightly on that issue in their pastoral letter that we've been talking about. But I think, to my ear to the ground kind of a thing, I believe that artificial reproductive technology will prove to be yet another threat to natural marriage, because people are using ART, women in particular, are thinking to themselves, well, gee, I don't really need to get married. You know, it'd be great to get married, but if I don't meet Mr. Right, I can always have an IVF baby when I'm 40. And so the prospect of IVF being widely available to anyone for any reason means that people's decision-making is being distorted and changed and colored by that maybe 20 years before they actually do it, you see. And so that's why it's so short-sighted and foolish to just say, well, how does this affect you? Well, if you can only hold one thought in your mind that lasts 30 seconds, then of course the answer is it won't affect you. But if you start thinking and connecting the dots from A to B to C to D, you will see that indeed there are really many, many ramifications. And same-sex marriage and artificial reproductive technology are connected to one another, because the advocates of same-sex marriage basically are moving towards making the use of artificial reproductive technology a flat-out, out-and-out entitlement, so that people are entitled to have a baby. It's not just that you have the right to try to have a baby, it's that you have the right to purchase a baby and purchase whatever services you need to have the family that you want. Well, that's a huge difference from people begetting children through natural sexual intercourse. Right, and so all of that is at stake in the debate over same-sex unions, as well as the use of artificial reproductive technology. So, you know, once again, the bishops have their finger on the pulse of something that's extremely important.
Jen, you have mentioned several times here this Nashville conference called Love and Life in the Divine Plan. Tell us about it with about 30 seconds.
Yes, we'll be holding this conference in Nashville, Tennessee, at Aquinas College, hosted by the Dominican Sisters of Nashville there. And it's called Love and Life in the Divine Plan, and you can learn about it at ruthinstitute.org. If you're within a day's driving distance of Nashville, you really should come to this conference. We'll be talking about all of the themes that I just described, and it costs a grand total of $25, you know, and you'll end up with breakfast, lunch, and the encyclical, and the pastoral letter in your hand at the end of it. So it's a bargain that's too good to pass up. And I know that some churches are using it for a teaching opportunity for some of their catechists and so on. I know that some dioceses, some of the Catholic dioceses, are doing that. And for those of you who are in the liturgical traditions, like the Lutheran or the Catholic tradition, I think it's a good opportunity to come and learn how the social science supports what the traditional teachings have always been. And if you have friends and neighbors who are skeptical on any of these points, this is a great opportunity to bring them, whatever their faith tradition might be, because basically what you're going to hear is a lot of natural law, social scientific information that will help bolster the traditional Christian teaching about marriage.
Folks, you can find out more about Love and Life in the Divine Plan, a family conference, February the 25th in Nashville, Tennessee, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities and has authored the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.